Hi, you're listening to another sermon from Deep Creek Anglican Church.
Good morning, everyone. My name is Tim Collison. I know it says Megan Curlis Gibson on the screen, so you might have got a bit of a surprise. I'm thankful to be here with you this morning. I've been a member of Deep Creek Anglican Church for 8 years now, and have participated in a variety of ways, from being on staff to a member to being part of parish council now. And as I start, Megan reflected at the start with us, and you guys shared some wonderful things about what we're grateful for. I'm really grateful for, as a church, how we have participated in this new way of church. People have come along and joined in Zoom. The team here, Sam, Megan, Nick, Susan, have worked really hard to continue to lead us as a church. Phil and Phoebe have done wonderful challenges, manning the tech desk, some really creative Mother's Day videos. Beth and Heidi have helped with music. I know there are people who are dropping off the bags that are put together for others. People have cooked meals, given grocery cards. So I'm really grateful for how the church is really seeking to live as the body of Jesus during this time. And I think that starts to point us to what this passage is about. To think about the fact that this passage, I preached on it before at Deep Creek, but I'm looking at it in a different way today, and thinking about the fact that we have a God of abundance. Even when our economy is collapsing, even when there's pestilence and plague. And that can be a really difficult thing to hold in tension. I know that some of you will be suffering financially, and I know some of you will be suffering not just financially, but stressed. You might still have your job, but now you've got to be homeschooling your kids, or you might not have seen anyone for ages, and you're feeling that stress. But I think this passage actually points us to how God chose how to live in abundance as a church, and how to live differently to what the world expects and thinks. And this passage starts with a king's refusal to obey God. And that disobedience creates a drought and a famine, and it shatters the agricultural economy of the time. Now, I want to be really clear. I am not linking the government of Ahab to the current government we have in Australia. So I'm not making any theological connections or points there. But the king's disobedience and that theological framework that the Israelites lived in saw the country's economy shatter. But the writer of Kings actually doesn't then focus on the king, doesn't focus on the king's court. The writer shows us a widow and her response to the situation. God sends his prophet Elijah to a widow. And a prophet is just, in that time, was someone who God spoke to the country through, who told them when they were following God, who called them back to God when they didn't follow God. And often he would speak to the king. He had a role in government in a sense that we don't really see today. But here God sends Elijah to a specific person, to a widow. And she was a widow, and that meant there was no financial support for her. Your financial support as a wife and as a partner in that time was really reliant on the man you married. Not all the time, but most of the time. That was your financial support. There was no Centrelink. If you had a good community, they might look after you. But essentially, she was now on her own. As a widow, when we're introduced to her that way, we know that this is a woman on her own with no resources. There was a drought, so she couldn't grow food. In that time, she couldn't go down to the local 7-Eleven or the local Coles. And she wouldn't have had any money anyway. I really appreciate how Susan drew out the point that the woman was a woman of faith, and we'll think about that more later. The kid's story kind of neglects the dramaticness of what the woman says. Elijah shows up, and she says, and he asks for food, and she says, "These are the sticks I'm gathering for my last meal. I have some flour and some oil, and then that's it. We're going to die." That's it. It's her last meal. And do you think Elijah might have felt a little bit embarrassed there? Imagine God said, "Go to this woman, she'll provide you with food." And then she said, "I don't have any food for you." Wouldn't you be embarrassed? You see in the Bible, they have this expectation of hospitality. When the three men show up at Abraham's place, he just offers them food. And I know our church is generous. I've had the real pleasure, and it's a pleasure because the people in this church are wonderful cooks, of eating with you. So many of you, and it has been really wonderful. And I know that if I showed up at your house and ask for food and you couldn't provide anything for me, you'd probably feel a bit embarrassed. And Elijah might be thinking, what's going on? But actually, you know who would have been more embarrassed than Elijah in this situation? The widow. In that culture, for her to not be able to provide food for Elijah would have seen her feel really shamed, like she had no honor, that she was failing as a person, and that while she wasn't an Israelite, the text seems to understand that she saw Elijah as a prophet as well, as a man of God, and she would have felt deep shame that she couldn't feed him. How could God have stuffed this up? He said, I'm going to send you to a widow who will provide you with food. And then she has no food. She's going to eat her last meal and die. And this actually is a bit dark, but it actually shows us something beautiful about God's economy. God's economy is not just about the finite material resources we have, about whether we have enough food or enough money to cover our needs. God's economy is about all of life. God has an economy of abundance, but it's an abundance that speaks into a full life. Because God now provides for the widow, but he provides in such a way to give her dignity and pride and to restore her honor. God doesn't just stop her from dying, he enables her to live. God could have made Elijah miraculously produce the olive oil and the bread, but remember what God says in the passage, the widow will provide Elijah with food. Susan drew out that the widow had faith. So when Elijah says to her, you know what? Go and bake the bread, use your flour, use your oil, and give me something to eat, and it won't run out for you. The widow had faith. So she's not only able to now survive, but more than that, she can provide hospitality as would have been expected in her culture, as she would have wanted to do. Her honor is restored by the way God provides for her. He's not just interested in her material needs, but in how she lives her life. God's economy is about life to the full. And John, Jesus says, I have come so that they may have life and have it to the full. Jesus doesn't say, I've come so that they may have a life and it's a subsistence life. It's life to the full. How you experience life in God's kingdom matters. God doesn't just want us to survive. He wants us to have a full life, to have enough to eat, a place to live, and people to do life with. And something to think about as we look at these verses is that God's economy is about creation and not just finite resources. In Ahab, who was a king at the time, he may not have been king of this region, but his father-in-law probably was. So he had influence and power there. When the rain stopped, there was no production, no economy. It would have impacted the trade routes, what they sold, what they bought. And Ahab was both the head of state and the head of government and the judiciary. He was every arm of government rolled into one person. He was all the cabinet committees, all the lobbyists, everything in one person. But he couldn't restart the economy. Didn't matter what strategies he came up with. Didn't matter what ideas he had. He could do nothing to restart the economy because there was no rain. But God creates food. In our world, we tend to think of our resources as finite. This is what I get in my salary. This is what I have in my pension. This is what I have in my bank account. This is how I feel okay. I feel good enough in myself to help someone this week. I have enough mental headspace to listen to someone else's problems. But God's economy isn't just about dividing up those limited resources. It's about creation. This passage reminds us that God takes a woman's limited resources, her flour and her bread, that she faithfully uses to provide Elijah with a meal, and he provides food for her for 3 years with that. God is a God of creation. God doesn't just use our limited resources, he can go beyond that. And this passage reminds me of Jesus. As I was thinking about this, I thought, you actually see echoes of 1 Kings 17 in the New Testament heaps of time. Jesus talks about the faith of the widow, and he actually uses it to have a go at the Jewish leaders. But we see this idea of Jesus being a creative God come up again. This passage about, one of the themes of this passage is that God is real and powerful over other gods. And in John 6, there's this passage where Jesus establishes his authority and says, I am God as well. And he does this by feeding 5,000 people. Jesus says to his disciples, we need to feed these people. They're hungry. He has compassion on them. And his disciples have what would have been the same response, to be honest, I would have had, an economic response. Jesus, how do we feed these people? We don't have any money. This wasn't in the budget for today. And Jesus, we're pretty sure you don't even pay us a salary. So what do you want us to do to feed these 5,000 people? That's the same response I would have had. I would have said, look, we don't have any money. We can't feed 5,000 people. But Jesus takes what a little boy freely offers him, the bread and the fish, and he creates it so that there is abundance. The disciples had an economic response, but God had a creative response. His economy is about abundance and creation. God's not limited by what's in our pockets. I love that the boy probably would have gone home and said, Jesus, well, his parents were probably there, but imagine how excited he was. Jesus took that little that I had and shared it with everyone. The boy offered up faithfully what he had, and Jesus multiplied it through a creative act. Hold on to that thought that God is a God of creation, because we dive into a real low point here. The mother would have been so afraid that her son was going to die. She was making her last meal for him. Remember, that would be painful, right? To be gathering the firewood to have the last meal with your son, knowing that he would then die, that you could do no more for him. And then life is given by a creative God. But then what the widow was afraid of happens. Her son dies. And she says, and even Elijah seems upset by this. He says, Lord, my God, have you brought tragedy even on this widow I'm staying with, causing her son to die? He recognizes the distress this widow is feeling. And Elijah asks God to restore the boy's life. And he can. Later on in Kings, we see a passage with Naaman. But at one point, Naaman goes to the king and asks how he can be cured of his leprosy. And the king goes, am I God that I can give life? The king saw that they couldn't give life. But God, through his prophet, provides life to this boy. And I know some of you might be wrestling with that because I know we experience sickness and death in our congregation. I know many of you will remember in May Cheryl McArdle and Sharon Noski. I never met Cheryl. I wish I had. I've only ever heard wonderful things about her. But I met Sharon. And I think when I thought about them in relation to the fact that, you know, you could say what Elijah said. Why have you brought tragedy on this family about them? I'm reminded what Paul says in Colossians chapter 1. For we have heard of your faith in Christ Jesus and your love for all of God's people because of your confident hope in what God has reserved for you in heaven. From what I knew about Sharon and what I've heard about Cheryl, you could say that about them. We have heard of your faith in Christ Jesus and your love for all of God's people because of the confident hope of what God has reserved for you in heaven. Like the widow, these were women of real faith. And like Megan spoke about last week, their faith flowed out of the gratitude to God and their actions were echoed in that. They understood that God was about an abundant life and their actions lived that. I know it's a hard time for you when you remember them, but I think as I think about Sharon and Cheryl, for me they're women who understood that God was about life, that God's economy was abundance, and they acted out of their hope they had in God. And that's what's different about our church. Yes, we can encourage people to live by the government rules, and we should do that. Yes, we can do things where we share food and money and resources with people, but we also tell people about the confident hope that is reserved for us in heaven. And we can invite people into that abundance of life. As Jesus says in John chapter 6, the same chapter where he feeds 5,000 people, he will not reject anyone who comes to him. And we see that. He has people who come to him who the community would have rejected, and he invites them in. In God, life is available for all. And we see that in this passage. Through God comes life. God is a God of creation, and he can restore life. So then, as a church, how do we live as followers of God in a time like this? We might think there's no abundance. We might think the economy is collapsing. We can see the impact of coronavirus. We've been spared a lot of the health impacts, but we can see what's happening in other countries, and we can be in distress. I think there's two ways as a church we can think about it and we can respond. And the first is being a prophet like Elijah. And I want to think about being a prophet like Elijah in a church and community sense. I think prophecies are still a spiritual gift which God gives to people, but I'm not sure we see prophets in the style of Elijah or Moses or John the Baptist. And that's because in the model we see in the Bible, they had a functioning government that we just don't experience because we don't have a theocratic government, a government that kind of says God is in charge of our government. But I actually think this office can be filled by Jesus' body, the church, both the global church speaking to governments, both the Australian church speaking to governments, but also our church here can be a prophetic Elijah in our community. And so when there's a lack of abundance in someone's life, the church can speak into that and act into that with the power of a generous God. God acts creatively and with creation through his prophet Elijah, and he can do that through his church, Deep Creek. 2 weeks ago, we heard from Gwyn and the work we support helping people in West Papua understand Jesus in their native language, to understand God's abundant life for them in their heart tongue. And we support that. It is a fantastic act of helping people have life. I work for the leprosy mission. Deep Creek supports that. I'm really thankful for that. The last gift from Deep Creek was enough to support surgery for 3 people affected by leprosy, helping them live independently. Like the woman here who's restored by God's providing the food for her, they can live independently again because of those surgeries. That's giving life to people. And it's not only just material resources the church can help with, it's with mental resources. It's having a chat over the phone. It's writing someone a note. It's sharing how you're responding in this time. And I've seen the church doing that, and that's really encouraging. And the result, people will proclaim, like the widow did, the word of the Lord from your mouth is the truth. But we do this together. So our first response is together as the church, we can be like the prophet Elijah, who God acts through, creatively giving abundance where we see finite resources. But the other thing we can think about is we're all going to be the widow at some point. We might need to ask, and that might make us feel very vulnerable. I can remember when I used to work at Deep Creek, I used to help organize Alpha. I said people were wonderful cooks in this church. They are. We'd have wonderful meals. But some weeks, I'd look at the roster for who was providing the meal, and there was no one there. And I'd get a bit resentful. I've got to tell you, like this lesson that God taught me about this situation, I only learned 2 weeks ago from a situation that happened like more than 5 years ago now. So I'm a bit slow. But I'd look at that list of meals being provided and go, there's no one next week or the week after. And I think, I have to ring and ask someone. Why do I have to do that? We're the church. Why can't people just sign up to provide a meal? And I get resentful. But actually, I realized God was giving me an opportunity, and God was giving me an opportunity to ask for help, and that's a good and a godly thing. I'm a fundraiser. I ask people for money. That can be awkward, but actually, to ask for help is to give people an opportunity to be drawn together by God to do a new thing. When we ask for help, we're actually enabling the church to be like Elijah, to prophetically create abundance in our life. And I know it can be really vulnerable to ask for help. I'm in a really fortunate position. I realize that. Some of you may be really struggling, and to say, I need help, can make you feel really vulnerable and nervous. But actually, when you do that, you're giving the church the opportunity to act in the way God calls us to. I've been really thankful that people have given cards so people can, like cash cards for groceries, so people can be helped in that way. I'm really thankful that people have asked for those as well and said, I need them, because they're enabling the church to be like Elijah. And you might think, I want to help the church be like Elijah, but I don't have many resources. Can I actually help you think? The widow gave what she had, flour and the oil. The boy gave his fish and his bread. Can I encourage you to think, one thing I love about the Bible, it says, if your season is one where you're just feeling like you can't do anything but take in what God is doing, that's okay to be that person. But if you have something small to share with the church, please do so. It might even be a short reflection going, look, I've been really sad, but I read this passage and it encouraged me. I felt really blessed by Bob's prayers as he thought about what it meant to be a church during this time. you might want to just share that with us, and Megan could chuck it in the church notes on Facebook if you're confident with that, and someone else might read that and go, oh, I could go read that Bible passage and be encouraged by that. So let me encourage you to think, if you're feeling like you don't have any resources, just humbly offer what you have, and God will take that and do more with it than you could have ever imagined. Can you imagine the shock on the boy's face when Jesus then fed 5,000 people with it? He wouldn't have expected that. He offered in faith, but he had no idea what Jesus would do with it. So I think we can all participate as Elijah, no matter what we have, no matter what God is doing in our lives, because we do that together. But we might sometimes need to be the widow who says, this is it. This is it. I have nothing. I'm going to die. Hopefully it's not that dramatic for you. Please really do get in contact with us straight away if it is. But where we are vulnerable and we ask for help, because that enables us as a church to be a prophetic Elijah to our community and live as the body of Jesus as we're called to. I'm going to pray. Next week I have the opportunity to share again. I'm going to be diving in a little bit into what it looks like to give faithfully as Christians, what private wealth means as a Christian. Just a little bit of a taster next week. But let me pray. Father, I am so thankful for Deep Creek and their generosity, not just in material ways, but emotional and spiritual ways to one another. I'm thankful for Cheryl and Sharon who really did have a confident hope in you and who gave so many people abundant life through their actions. Help us like them to act in a gratitude that flows from our love for you. Help us as a church to be like Elijah, and help us when we struggle to be vulnerable to be able to ask for help. In Jesus' name, amen. It's been wonderful to share with you this morning over Zoom. And I will see you next week.